So back in 2011, there was this landmark study that proved something pretty terrifying, honestly.
Oh, right, the one about the brain actively forgetting things.
Yeah, exactly. Like the moment your brain knows a fact is safely saved on a computer somewhere, it actively begins to forget it.
It's wild. And, fast forward to today, we basically have the ultimate external brain sitting right at our fingertips.
Right. So the big question is, are we accidentally erasing our own cognitive abilities every single time we open a chat window?
I mean, that really is the defining question of our current technological era. The tools are undeniably incredible, but our biology hasn't changed in thousands of years.
No, not at all.
Our brains still operate on this really strict energy conservation model, and we are just handing them the ultimate excuse to power down.
Well, welcome to this deep dive. For you listening right now, our mission today is to really figure out how to maintain your cognitive health in an age where machines can quite literally do your thinking for you.
It's a huge topic.
It really is. And we are looking at this fascinating index advisory brief today. It's titled Going on the Offensive: Getting Smarter and Better by Using AI as a Sparring Partner.
And what makes this particular stack of sources, and honestly kind of mind-blowing, is that it includes an actual formal assessment of that very brief conducted by the AI model Gemini itself.
Yeah, which is just incredible. We have these human advisory warnings about the dangers of automation placed directly alongside machine self-reflection on those exact same dangers.
It's a remarkable look at the situation, really.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because at the core of all these sources is this massive conflict. On one hand, you have the undeniable power of generative AI, right?
Right.
It can synthesize information from thousands of sources in seconds. But then on the other hand, you have our own mental agility. And the brief uses a term that just hit me right between the eyes.
The AI potato.
Yes. They warn against becoming an AI potato.
It's a great visual. It's the intellectual equivalent of a couch potato. The brief also points to this idea of the armchair athlete.
Oh, yeah, or the flabby boxer, right?
Exactly. Imagine someone who just sits ringside, obsessively watching other boxers fight. They analyze the matches, they download all the stats.
But they never actually put on the gloves.
Right. They absolutely never get in the ring to spar themselves.
And that's exactly what we're doing. We sit there watching Claude or Gemini do all the intellectual footwork, and we sort of trick ourselves into feeling like we just won the championship.
Yeah, we feel smart because the output is smart.
But, I mean, if my phone can hold all the answers in the world, why should my brain need to? What is the actual biological cost of me dumping that data?
Well, to understand the cost, we really have to look at how human memory actually functions when we outsource our thinking. And, it's not just some theoretical risk. It is a highly documented phenomenon.
Which makes me think about a very specific modern experience. Think about using a GPS on your phone.
Oh, that's the perfect example.
Right. You move to a new city. And every single time you get in the car, you turn on the app. You just blindly follow the little blue dot. You do this every day for like 6 months.
And you feel like you know your way around.
Exactly. But then one day, your battery dies. And you're sitting there at a stoplight, and you suddenly realize you have absolutely no idea how to navigate your own neighborhood without a screen.
You've completely outsourced your spatial awareness.
It's terrifying.
It is. And that GPS phenomenon is a perfect real-world manifestation of what the scientific literature calls the Google effect, which is prominently featured in our sources today.
It's a great name, the Google effect.
Yeah.
But what's the actual mechanism there? Like, why doesn't the brain just passively absorb the route after seeing it on the screen 50 times?
Because of that energy conservation model we mentioned earlier, the brain is this incredibly energy-hungry organ, and thinking, specifically encoding long-term memories, it physically burns calories.
Right, it's actual work.
Exactly. So the Gemini assessment in our sources brings up this landmark 2011 study. It was published in the journal Science by a researcher named Betsy Sparrow.
Okay, and what was she looking at?
She wanted to know what happens when people know information is easily accessible online.
Wait, how do you even test something like that?
It was a brilliantly simple design, actually. They had participants type dozens of random trivia statements into a computer.
Okay.
Half the participants were told that their typed statements would be saved, so they could look at them later. The other half were told their statements would be immediately erased.
Oh, wow. Let me guess. The people who thought the computer saved the info couldn't remember a thing.
Drastically lower recall.
Yeah.
When we believe a fact or a piece of data is stored safely in an external drive, whether that's a search engine or today a generative AI.
The brain just doesn't bother.
Right. The brain essentially says, I don't need to spend the biological energy to encode this.
So the brain literally dumps the data because it knows the internet has a backup copy.
Pretty much. But here is the really fascinating twist from Sparrow's study. The brain doesn't just shut down entirely. It actually shifts its function.
What do you mean by shifts?
They found that instead of remembering the fact itself, people became incredibly good at remembering where to find the fact.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so you don't remember the exact population of a country. You just remember the specific prompt you used to find it or which folder you saved it in. You remember the location of the information, not the substance.
That feels so true. It's like treating ChatGPT the way we treat a spouse.
Huh, exactly.
You know, it's like, I don't need to remember our anniversary because I know my partner put it on the shared calendar.
That is precisely what it is. Psychologists actually call it a transactive memory system. We've always done this in groups or couples.
Oh, I see.
But the danger now is that we are using a machine that contains essentially all human knowledge as our transactive memory partner, which means we are outsourcing practically everything.
There's this quote from the brief that highlights this beautifully, I think. It says, a wise person said, trying to make life easy is what makes it hard.
Such a great quote.
Right. We're giving up all the internal cognitive heavy lifting to the smart machines.
And by opting for that path of least resistance, we are actively setting ourselves up for mental decline.
But wait, I have to challenge this premise for a second.
Right.
Because every fiber of my being, every piece of tech design, every app update I download, it's all about reducing friction.
Oh, absolutely. Seamless integration.
Right. One-click answers, zero wait time. It feels completely counterintuitive. You're telling me that this friction is actually a feature, not a bug.
What's fascinating here is that cognitive psychology proves exactly that. The friction isn't just some annoying byproduct of learning. It is the actual biological mechanism of learning.
Okay, walk me through that.
So the framework for this is called desirable difficulties.
Desirable difficulties. I gotta say, it sounds like a terrible marketing slogan.
It really does. But it is the foundation of cognitive science. Our sources lean really heavily into this highly regarded book called Make It Stick by Brown, Roediger, and McDaniel.
Right, from 2014.
Yeah. And it summarizes decades of research proving that learning simply must be effortful to be effective.
Okay, but what does effortful mean neurologically? Because, I mean, when I sit down with a really complex 20-page article and I highlight it and I read it three times over, that feels like effort. It feels productive. Is the science saying I'm not actually learning it?
Well, yes. That smooth, repetitive reading is what researchers call passive review. It creates this dangerous illusion of fluency.
Illusion of fluency.
Yeah, because the words look familiar on your third pass. Your brain kind of tricks you into thinking you've mastered the concepts. But beneath the surface, you haven't fundamentally changed the neural architecture of your brain.
Wow.
To actually learn, you need something called active retrieval.
Active retrieval. Okay, give me an analogy here, because I think we get really stuck on these academic terms.
Yeah.
To me, passive review sounds like putting a piece of tracing paper over a beautiful drawing and just tracing the lines.
Oh, I like that.
Right. It looks perfect. It's super easy. And at the end, you have a nice picture. But if someone suddenly takes the tracing paper away and says, okay, now draw it from scratch, you have absolutely no idea how to do it. You never learn the proportions. You just follow the path.
That tracing analogy is spot on. So active retrieval is throwing away the tracing paper entirely and forcing yourself to draw from memory.
Even if it looks terrible at first.
Especially if it looks terrible. It's the struggle. It's closing the book and forcing your brain to pull the information out of the void. And there is a profound biological reason why that struggle is so necessary.
What's actually happening in the brain during that struggle?
Well, when you desperately try to retrieve a piece of information, it induces a mild stress response. That struggle sends a chemical signal through your neural network saying, hey, this information is important to our survival.
Oh, wow.
And that signal triggers cells in your brain to release a substance called myelin, which literally wraps around the neural pathway, thickening it.
It's like insulation on a wire.
Exactly. It turns a dusty dirt road into a paved superhighway. But if you don't struggle, like if the AI just hands you the summary instantly, that myelination never happens.
So if I just ask an AI to summarize a huge report for me,
yeah,
and I read its perfect, bulleted list. I am literally starving my brain of the very struggle it needs to pave those neural highways.
Yes. You get the answer in the moment, sure, but you gain zero lasting knowledge. And active retrieval is just one piece of it. The sources also highlight a second critical technique from Make It Stick called interleaved practice.
Interleaved practice. I feel like this one gets glossed over a lot. What does that actually look like in the real world?
Think about a professional baseball player taking batting practice.
Oh, okay.
If the pitching machine throws 50 fastballs in a row, the batter is going to look amazing, right?
Yeah.
They groove their swing, they hit home run after home run, it feels really easy.
Yeah, they're just locked in.
That's called blocked practice. But in a real game, they strike out. Because a real pitcher doesn't throw 50 fastballs in a row.
Right, they throw a curveball, then a slider, then a changeup.
Exactly. So interleaved practice is programming that pitching machine to throw completely random pitches. Fastball, slider, curveball, changeup.
Which sounds way harder.
In practice, the batter is going to look terrible at first. They are going to swing and miss. They are going to get incredibly frustrated. It introduces massive friction.
Right.
But what they're actually learning is pitch recognition. Their brain is being forced to instantly evaluate a new problem and select the right solution over and over again.
Okay, so translating that to our intellectual lives.
Yeah.
If I spend 3 hours doing the exact same type of data entry, or say I ask an AI to fix 5 identical coding bugs in a row, I'm just hitting fastballs. My brain just goes on autopilot.
Yes. Interleaving means deliberately mixing up the subjects or the types of problems you are solving. It forces the brain to constantly adjust and ask, wait, which rule applies here?
It breaks the autopilot.
Exactly. It is difficult. It slows you down, but the retention and mastery just skyrocket.
This raises an important question, though. I mean, I completely get the theory. I understand the biology of the myelin and the batting practice.
Right.
But in the real world, if it's 8 a.m. and I have a dense 50-page legal brief that I absolutely need to understand for a 9 a.m. meeting, I am going to use an AI to summarize it. I just have to. The demand for speed is way too high.
Which is completely understandable.
So how do we reconcile this science with the reality of our modern jobs? We can't just ignore these tools.
No, we absolutely shouldn't ignore them. The goal isn't to become some kind of technological martyr, right? The goal is to fundamentally change our relationship with the technology. And the Index Advisory Brief provides a very specific framework for this.
Okay.
They call it going on the offensive.
Here's where it gets really interesting, I think. Because going on the offensive implies a fight. It means we stop treating AI agents like these all-knowing oracles that we just blindly bow down to.
Right. Because if you treat AI as an oracle, you are inherently passive. The offensive strategy says we need to treat AI as a worthy sparring partner.
Okay, so practically speaking, what does that actually look like at 8 a.m. with that huge legal brief?
Well, it means you don't just type summarize this and then lazily copy-paste the output into your brain. You use the tool to introduce friction back into the dynamic.
How so?
You might ask the AI, read this brief and tell me the 3 weakest arguments the author makes. Then you read those arguments and you tell the AI why it's wrong. You actively ask it to play devil's advocate against your own original ideas.
Oh, I love that. You are using the AI to test your reasoning, not to just replace your reasoning.
Exactly.
You're stepping into the ring and using the machine to throw those curveballs at you.
You are intentionally manufacturing the act of retrieval. You are forcing the machine to provide the intellectual resistance that your cognitive muscles physically require to grow.
That makes so much sense.
And what is highly encouraging is that we're actually starting to see this offensive philosophy built directly into new platforms.
Really? Organizations are already pivoting to this.
Yeah. The sources specifically note that the Indoor Health Council is developing learning and engagement tools based entirely on this premise.
Oh, wow.
They recognize the danger of the AI potato. So they aren't building tools that just hand users easy answers. They are utilizing the incredibly adaptive capabilities of AI to specifically train the human brain.
That's a huge shift.
It is. Their tools are being designed to force the user to actively think, to retrieve information, to debate, and to apply knowledge contextually.
That is brilliant. They are essentially building a cognitive gym. But instead of lifting iron, you are using conversational AI as the resistance machine.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, though, there is a deeply profound, almost comedic irony in the source material we are analyzing today. We really have to talk about the Gemini assessment.
Oh, man. The fact that an actual AI was asked to read this brief about the dangers of AI and then evaluate its claims, it's incredibly meta.
It is so meta. The researchers fed the index brief directly to Gemini. They essentially said, hey, this human document argues that over-reliance on you will turn people into AI potatoes and that humans need desirable difficulties to maintain their cognitive function.
Right. What do you think of that?
Exactly. What is your objective evaluation of this human argument?
And what was the AI's official verdict?
It rated the argument as highly sound.
The AI actually agreed that it is making us dumber.
Emphatically. The machine analyzed the cognitive psychology literature, Sparrow's research, Roediger and McDaniel's work, and it explicitly agreed with the human advisory.
That is wild.
It stated that the warning perfectly aligns with the established science of memory. The AI itself confirmed. If you let me do all the retrieval work for you, your brain will not form the neural pathways you need to maintain critical thinking.
That is incredible. The oracle is essentially looking at us and saying, stop treating me like an oracle, put up a fight.
Yeah.
It evaluated the offensive strategy, using AI as a sparring partner, and concluded it is a scientifically sound approach to surviving the automation age with our minds actually intact.
It is a really rare moment of technological self-awareness completely validating human cognitive science. The tools themselves know they are dangerous if used passively.
So what does this all mean? For you, listening right now, it means it is time to throw away the tracing paper.
Absolutely.
Generative AI is a staggering, miraculous synthesizer of aggregated knowledge. But if you want to protect your mental health, your memory, and your fundamental ability to think critically, you cannot be a passive consumer of that synthesis.
You have to put your knowledge to work over time. Just as a lack of physical movement is, you know, demonstrably hazardous to your body, avoiding mental friction is actively hazardous to your brain.
The biology is clear.
It really is. Without the struggle, without the active retrieval, the myelin doesn't form. The pathways degrade.
So the next time you open up a chat window, don't just accept the first beautifully formatted paragraph it hands you. Push back.
Tell it why its underlying premise is flawed.
Yeah, ask it to generate a niche counterpoint that forces you to defend your own position. Demand that the technology actually challenges you rather than just coddling you.
We have to step into the ring. We have to purposefully manufacture the desirable difficulties that modern convenience is trying so desperately to erase.
Which leaves me with one final thought for you to mull over today as you head back out into an increasingly automated world.
Let's hear it.
We've talked extensively about avoiding decline,
right?
About not losing our internal maps, about not becoming flabby thinkers.
Right.
But let's flip that entirely. If human brains adapt structurally based on the specific resistance they encounter, and if we actually heed this warning, if we begin using these hyper-intelligent AI models not as crutches, but as daily, relentless intellectual sparring partners that constantly adjust to our skill level, what entirely new cognitive muscles might we develop? Could this desirable difficulty, combined with the vast instantaneous knowledge of AI, actually push human critical thinking to a level of strength and agility we've never seen before in history?
That's a fascinating thought.
It really makes you wonder what kind of unprecedented intellectual athletes we could become if we just agree to embrace the friction.